806 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on this Labor Day Monday, and the Jimmy Buffett tribute continues here on Mobile Mornings.
Nice pull, too. One of my favorites right here.
And the texts are coming in, too. Love those, and y'all keep them coming throughout the hour. Your personal brushes with Jimmy Buffett and stories you have to tell. We'll get to those for sure this hour. Also, a reminder, just after 8:30, we'll talk with a biographer who wrote Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way. Ryan White joins us in the second half of the hour. But first up, and actually someone who, I don't know, Jim, if you broke the news about Jimmy Buffett's passing, but you're one of the first posts I saw about it this Saturday once that news came down. You posted a little bit about Jimmy Buffett. Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, joins us on this Labor Day. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, Dawn, good to be here, man.
And, man, we'll talk Buffett all hour, but there was also this weekend, first weekend of college football, first official weekend, I guess. And I know we had a lot of Auburn fans listening to this station, the start of the Hugh Freeze era. Had a lot of Alabama fans wondering, you know, what are we going to look like? They weren't satisfied with how the last couple of years turned out. They got to see Jalen Milroe at quarterback. And then, of course, we had the Big South and Tulane game on Saturday night in New Orleans. We'll get to those, but Senior Bowl coming up beginning of next year. And you're putting together a 75th anniversary team for the Senior Bowl this year.
That's right.
75 years.
Yeah, it's a big year for us, really big year for us. And so we did a 50th anniversary team, obviously 25 years ago, honored a bunch of, you know, all-time legends, Walter Payton. I think our backfield was Bo Jackson, Walter Payton, and Franco Harris. Joe Namath was the quarterback. Yeah. You know, but a lot of those guys aren't with us anymore. So we're just going to honor like the last 25 years of our game's history. So it'll be guys that played in the NFL from 98 to 2023. So some of the names we were talking about off air, you know, Dan Marino at quarterback, LaDainian Tomlinson at running back. I mean, it's going to be a who's who. These guys are all either in Canton already or on their way to Canton. So it's going to be great. And the partnership with the NFLPA is going to allow us to bring these guys back to Mobile for a huge gala. Like, this is going to be something Mobile's never seen before. I mean, you get 40 Pro Football Hall of Famers in one room. That's going to be Friday night of game week.
Man.
So, yeah, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without this NFLPA deal, because obviously that's expensive. You're flying back 40 players and their significant others and 40 hotel rooms at the Grand Hotel. Like, it's going to...
Pricey.
The price tags is going to go up pretty quick. So the PA deal was a really big one for us. So now we're going to bring all these guys back. So, yeah, we started the fan vote this morning. And I was telling you guys, I've been on the phone texting all morning with a bunch of guys that are on this list, trying to help them, you know, get the word out on social media, help us promote this thing. But yeah, exciting day.
Yeah, before I had children, I played this football video game called Madden, and I played it a lot. And
they I'm sure you did.
They would do these, you know, classic teams where you could put a lot of these guys who played over the years, and I imagine you could stack up this 75th anniversary team, these guys over the last 25 years, you could stack that roster up and guys who played in the Senior Bowl about pretty much really any era. You take some great guys, and you've had some ridiculous dudes who've gone from the Senior Bowl onto Hall of Fame careers at the next level.
Yeah, and again, like, obviously nobody's more in tune with the history of the Senior Bowl, or should be, than myself. But even when we were putting together this list of finalists, you're like, man, this team's ridiculous. We're just talking about the defensive line. Mm-hmm. You have Aaron Donald, who's probably on the Mount Rushmore of best defensive players of all time, with like Lawrence Taylor and a couple other guys, and then Michael Strahan, DeMarcus Ware, who a lot of people in this state that know and love from Troy University. I mean, that's incredible. And then like linebackers like Derek Brooks and Patrick Willis and Bobby Wagner and Brian Urlacher.
Cow.
Yeah, I'd line up with that team any day.
That is awesome. So the fan vote has begun?
It's begun already, yeah. It's on SeniorBowl.com. If you go to SeniorBowl.com, there's a banner at the top of the page, and that'll take you right to the vote.
And the plan is for these guys to be in town, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's 40 spots on the team. We're planning on bringing all these guys back into town. We'd like to get them out there to Thursday's practice if it fits into their schedule. I mean, like, Michael Strahan does the Good Morning America thing, so I don't know if we can get him back here for like 4 days, but some of these guys I'd like to get back for practice on Thursday. We're going to do the big gala event on Friday night, and then for the game on Saturday.
Yeah, and I love how you guys have really expanded that week, and with the Mardi Gras parade and everything, you've really brought a lot of new things since you've become executive director with the Senior Bowl. Love that. Also, a lot of games over the weekend, some big surprises, too. I wanted to talk about quarterbacks with you, though,
yeah.
First. And I know I don't know if that's the toughest position that you have to pare down.
This year it is.
There's some big names. And I know one that a lot of folks around here will be watching tonight, Riley Leonard, as he takes snaps for the Duke Blue Devils. Now, I know he's a junior, you look at the top of the mock draft, and last year's Heisman winner, Caleb Williams, who was doing some more magic again this weekend. You had Drake May, who put it to South Carolina this weekend. Quinn Ewers, which I'll be honest, the only reason I was watching the entire Texas Rice game was to see if Arch Manning would get snaps. He's third string. He didn't get any snaps. But like I mentioned, Riley Leonard tonight. What do you make of this quarterback class as a whole? Because it seems like one of the more strong groups we've seen in a while.
Yeah, unfortunately, Riley's not a part of that. we'd love to have a Fairhope guy in the Senior Bowl. I told him this summer we went out to dinner on the Causeway back in June. He had one of his buddies from his left tackle at Duke is going to be a high draftable player. So we took those guys out, and I told Riley, I'm like, man, I hope you have a good year, but I hope you don't have a great year, because we'd love to. we really want you to go back to Duke for another year and play in the Senior Bowl. Yeah. But no, it's a strong class. So usually we go into the year, the last 5 years, we've gone into the season, you know, probably 10 to 15 guys that have a realistic chance of getting a Senior Bowl invite. But with so many guys using the NIL money to come back to school, I mean, it makes more financial sense for a lot of these guys to stay in.
Yeah.
Because they're all getting six figures right now to play college football. So it's guaranteed money. I mean, the draft is a crapshoot, right? So the number this year is there's probably 20, 25 guys that we're keeping an eye on. There's more than that on our watch list. I mean, we had 30 some quarterbacks, I think. So yeah, it's going to be some tough cuts, some really tough cuts. And a lot of those guys played well this weekend. You saw what Jordan Travis did last night in the Florida State LSU game. He looks like he made a step forward from last year. So yeah, that's going to be by far the hardest cuts we've had at quarterback since I got here 6 years ago.
Yeah, I believe both were seniors last night, right? You had Travis, but also Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, right now Jaden's our number two quarterback on our board, and quite frankly, he got outplayed. So there's some really good ones.
The pocket presence for Jordan Travis last night, I mean, that stood out to me just about as much as anything. He's got almost like owl vision, like 360, just watching him work in that pocket and then buy some time back there. I know a lot of the guys and a lot of the quarterbacks, they'll look to run, tuck the ball and run as soon as they don't have an open receiver. But even though he has some of that ability, he kind of just hangs around back there and makes people miss until he can find the open guy.
Yeah, it reminded me of my time with the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson. That's Russell always kind of had that eyes in the back of his head quality too. And Bama fans saw it all these years with Bryce Young. Bryce had that quality as well. But yeah, he had a great night, and nobody's done a better job in the portal in the last 8 months than Mike Norvell at Florida State. He got a couple guys. Jaheim Bell scored their last two touchdowns, was kind of a transfer tight end, running back, kind of a multi-purpose tool for them. He scored a couple, and then Keon Coleman, the receiver from Michigan State. So five of their six touchdowns last night came out of the portal this year.
Wow.
Those touchdowns weren't even on the roster back in February. So they did a great job. Great opening win statement for Florida State.
Yeah, a new era with that portal for sure. Maybe the most discussed game over the weekend, Neon Deion, his first game with Colorado. And I maybe it was under-discussed with a lot of his guys, speaking of the transfer portal, coming from Jackson State and the HBCU. But talk a little bit about the two main names there. Travis Hunter, who was such a highly – playing both sides of the ball, which Neon did, but you don't see that very, very much these days. And not just playing, but dominated on both sides of the ball. And then Deion's son, Shador Sanders, I know he's a junior this year also, but that was surprising to a lot of people what they did and came out and did to TCU.
Surprised me. It shocked me. And again, I'm a big fan of Deion. We had the chance to go up to Jackson State last August and speak to the team up there. And, you know, those guys were here in Mobile last year, you know, playing that game. Shador and Travis Hunter were down here doing their thing at Ladd Stadium. So, but unbelievable. Unbelievable what Deion's done. I brought in over 80 new players. I mean, it's basically a new football team. So to build culture and chemistry and get everyone on the same page, I think what gets overlooked, they have a really good coaching staff. He made a heck of a hire. They've got a guy, Sean Lewis, who was the head coach at Kent State the last few years and got Kent State to bowl games. And again, I've been on every college campus in the country during my time in the NFL. Kent State is as hard a place to win college football games as anywhere in America, and he was taking them to bowl games. And you got to think, he stepped down from a head coaching job to take a coordinator job. Not many guys would do that. So he put together an unbelievable game plan, And that TCU team, I was there 2 weeks ago in Fort Worth. They have a bunch of NFL players. That is not like some talent-ridden team that, you know, made a one-year run at the college football playoff last year. So, yeah, incredible what Deion and his boys did this weekend.
Talking with executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, this morning about Travis Hunter and playing both sides of the ball. Is that possible in today's NFL? It's been a while since we've seen somebody. I mean, every now and then you'll have a gadget player come in from the defensive side of the ball, maybe run a reverse or get the ball in his hands if he's able. But is it possible for anyone to do these days what Deion Sanders used to do and legitimately play both sides in an NFL game?
Yeah, I think you can. Just the amount of snaps is what you got to be careful of. He played 129 snaps the other day. I mean, just so for a reference so people know, I mean, 60 to 70 snaps is usual for most players. So he played about double. So I don't know if there will ever be a full-time two-way player ever again. But Deion wasn't a full-time guy either. During my time with the Patriots, we had Troy Brown was our slot receiver, and we got really banged up at cornerback 1 year. He went over and played nickel and had 3 interceptions in the last month of the season.
Wow.
And he'd never played corner in his life. He learned how to do it in practice and one other. So it can be done. And Travis might be the next guy. I mean, coming out of high school, he was the number one receiver and corner prospect. He was a 5-star. Mm-hmm. And Deion got him to Jackson State. So, yeah, he might be the next guy.
Talk a little bit about Auburn and Alabama this weekend. And I know you put the senior watch list out about a week and a half ago, and it's just littered with guys from both teams. A lot of folks were looking at the quarterback position for both sides, and they have a lot of options, let's just say that. And they could be heading in the direction both teams with running quarterbacks. And I know Peyton Thorne got the start for Auburn. They were playing UMass. He didn't have to do much. But Robbie Ashford got back in the game, rushed for 3 touchdowns. Bama fans looking at Jalen Milroe. And that's kind of, I mean, you don't see very many pure pocket passers. And the SEC is going that way a lot, too, where they really put a premium on guys who can run around with that ball in their hand.
Yeah, and I gotta admit, I did not see either of those games.
No, had your eyes on seniors.
I was driving to New Orleans for the Tulane South Alabama game, so I was listening to the Auburn game on your fine station. But that was truly a dry run for both teams, Middle Tennessee State and UMass. But Robbie Ashford, when you watch tape of Auburn last year, he's an athlete. Like, I wish that guy would commit himself to just be a receiver or a running back, because that's what he looks like when he runs the ball. Like, some quarterbacks are athletic and they can run the ball a little bit, but they look like quarterbacks when they're running. Robbie Ashford looks like a skilled player when he's running the football, when he tucks it. So, it was good. Good first win. I mean, they took care of business the way they should have taken care of business, but it's going to be a whole different thing this week with Texas coming to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. You got some good quarterback play on the other side of the Texas game, too. And we'll be talking with you all year about all of these games. I guess one last question I have for you, and maybe Auburn fans will see a lot more of this going forward with Hugh Freeze being the head coach now. And not a bad start, by the way. I think they scored on 8 of their 12 drives before they ran the clock out at the end. But I've got my eyes on one former Auburn player, also former Liberty player, Malik Willis in the NFL. And him coming from that Hugh Freeze offense, how difficult is it to transition from a lot of these college offenses where they call the play from the sideline and the team watches the coaches call the play? The quarterback doesn't really have to get in the huddle, maybe doesn't really audible very often. More and more college teams are running their offenses in that fashion, and NFL teams really haven't done the same. Is it tough, an even tougher transition for quarterbacks these days from college to the NFL?
No doubt. No, I definitely, yeah, they're used to looking over the sidelines, some guys holding up a big poster board with Fred Flintstone on it or something, and that's the play. So, but that's a big pull for us at the Senior Bowl. We tell all the quarterbacks, like, you got to come down here and show these guys you can get in a huddle, spit out verbiage. I mean, even Daniel Jones, the starting quarterback for the New York Giants, when we had him in the game 5 years ago, he had John Gruden here, and John Gruden's offense is, like, very voluminous. Like, you can't even, I mean, the play calls are really, really long, and Daniel's a smart guy, and he was struggling. Just to get in the huddle, have that presence, have that command, It is a good selling point for us. But yeah, the quarterback transition thing is really hard. But again, Hugh Freeze can't worry about that. Hugh Freeze has to win games for Auburn. He doesn't have to worry about, like, making the NFL people happy. He just needs to run his offense.
Good stuff. Jim, we appreciate you coming in with us again today. The 75th anniversary team fan voting open now. SeniorBowl.com?
Yeah, SeniorBowl.com. Head there, vote. Let's see which guys you want to bring back here to Mobile. And happy Labor Day, guys.
Hey, same to you. Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy joining us this Monday. And coming back, we'll get to your texts and phone calls, 251-343-0106. 95 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Appreciate Jim Nagy coming on with us, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, and we'll be talking to him a lot this year. And coming up, reminder, Ryan White, author of Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way. We'll talk with him, get that conversation started here in the next 10 minutes or so. But Sean Sullivan in for Dan Brennan today.
Hey, good morning.
On this Labor Day Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, look at it. So many texts here, people with their memories of Jimmy Buffett. And it was a conversation I had over the weekend as the news came out on Saturday. And the to put it in Jimmy E's, the Coconut Telegraph started popping. My phone was ringing, texts coming in. People's just different memories. People that knew him back in the 60s to a guy like me that wasn't around until the 70s. But the legend loomed large of Jimmy Buffett growing up here. You know, that would be one of your calling cards elsewhere. You'd be like, well, where are you from? This place called Mobile, Alabama. There's, oh, I said, hey, that's where Jimmy Buffett grew up. So, you know, even though CNN said he was born here, he's actually born in Pascagoula, mm-hmm. but grew up here.
Yeah, and Jimmy Buffett, one of those guys that everyone wants to claim, but Mobile certainly has a good hold of that with his school days at McGill and then playing at the Admiral's Corner and all, you know, so many stories I saw pop up over the weekend. I do want to get to, if I can find it again, the story about Jimmy taking Bono down to was it Jamaica? I can't remember. They were going down to just stop and get some food on Jimmy's plane, and I guess the local authorities thought it was a drug running plane, and he wrote a song about it and everything. We were talking about that a little bit earlier, but some great stories about Jimmy Buffett coming in. Love these texts. Jimmy, when he was a cheerleader at McGill, mm-hmm. also altar boy at St. Ignatius,
yep.
Some good stuff there and some great stories that have been coming out all weekend long. Let's see. Michael on the text line says, even on Labor Day morning, Airport Boulevard is in full effect.
Don't get me started, Michael. It was okay. Five something, before something this morning when I was coming in, it was okay, but it was still, I had some lights I sat through. Believe me, Michael, the struggle is real with light sinking on Airport Boulevard.
Yeah, I agree. Gardner texted him, when are you going to play Let's Get Drunk and ...
We already had.
Yeah, we've been playing it. None of the words made it onto the this morning show. but we had some Let's Get Drunk and ... playing a little bit earlier. I love the text from Sheila earlier talking about Jimmy given to, of course, he went to Southern Miss. Alma
he went to Auburn.
Was he at Auburn for a full semester?
It's happened to many people.
Someone said
too much fun.
Yeah, he was in the journalism program there, which makes him like the smartest person to go through the journalism program because he dropped out of it so quickly. but talking about him giving a boat right to where was it? Well, maybe she put it on my Twitter page, but he donated a boat to one of the Ocean Springs, Mississippi, the Marine Research Center, the Miss Peetsy B, named after his mother, Peets. But that story also came out this weekend. The Battleship Memorial Park on their Facebook page said that Jimmy anonymously donated two of the planes that are right there at the aircraft pavilion. And it remained anonymous until this weekend.
Grumman Goose from like his logos and all that. You'll see that one in there and a non-float plane as well in the mix. And so, yeah, we'll continue with your memories on the text line of Jimmy all these years later.
Yeah, coming up, Ryan White, who wrote Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way, joins us after the break.
Wanted to sail upon your waters since I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all. Seen it all. Watch the man who rode you switch from sails to steam. In your belly you hold the treasures you have ever seen. Most of them dream.
Funny you should ask, Alan. I'd say,
oh, welcome back. Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5, and Jimmy Buffett tribute continuing this morning on Mobile Mornings. I'm Dalton Orwig, Sean Sullivan in for Dan Brennan today.
Hey, good morning.
And appreciate all the texts. We'll get to some of these throughout the rest of our show this morning. A lot of you with your personal brushes with Jimmy Buffett over the years. And excited to welcome our next guest on the show today, somebody who knows a whole heck of a lot about the former Mobilian, Jimmy Buffett. Ryan White joins us, author of Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
So your book, A Good Life All the Way, I read it a while back after the sad news that came down Saturday morning. I cracked it open and I was thinking, you know what, why don't we just try to get Ryan on the show, as you wrote about so much of Jimmy's life, from his birth, Pascagoula, his time here in Mobile, making his way down to Key West after a short trip to Nashville. And I imagine as you were writing this book, you heard so many of the stories that we're hearing today from around the country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, there are a handful of things that, you know, as I thought about it all again over the weekend that stand out. I mean, one of the things you just mentioned is, you know, people's personal brushes. Obviously, he had a very strong connection to Mobile, where he grew up and stuff. But man, you couldn't go 10 minutes around boats or airplanes without somebody, wherever I was in the country, having a Jimmy Buffett story. You couldn't. You wandered, you know, random musicians that you would have thought would never have a Jimmy Buffett story had a Jimmy Buffett story. You know, Patterson Hood from the Drive By Truckers, who lives out in Portland, Oregon now, who I know a little bit from when I was out there, was telling the story that they were in Drive By Truckers are in Montreal one night, and the phone comes from an unknown number. You know, phone rings from an unknown number, and it was Jimmy Buffett saying, "Hey, I happen to be in Montreal. Can I come to the show?" So he went out to the Drive By Truckers show, and you know, in the through all of that, nobody has a bad word to say. I mean, you saw, you know, especially in the, you know, a lot of the tributes that the other musicians and actors. I mean, he had a foot in so many pieces of popular culture, and you know, the thing that comes through time and again was that, you know, he carried a real joyful spirit through the world that was contagious. And I think that, you know, I think more than anything else, that's what allowed him to build the audience that he built over the years when he didn't have radio, when he didn't have hits, when he didn't have, you know, all the things that you normally would associate with filling arenas and amphitheaters and stadiums, was this kind of joyful giving spirit, and people picked up on it and they carried it along.
Yeah, you talked about that, Ryan, that kind of radio didn't have a place for him early on because he did this thing that was different that ended up becoming truly a brand. When I think about the legacy of Jimmy, I think about brands. And I also mentioned this morning that he worked so very hard at putting on a laid-back attitude. You know, everybody thinks Jimmy is laid back and chilled out and flip-flops. The man was tireless in his efforts.
Yeah, and right up to the very end, it sounds like. You know, Carl Hyson wrote a piece, you know, about how, you know, they were in the Bahamas, and, you know, Jimmy was battling cancer, and he was still clicking away and making small edits on songs, and, like, you know, people were telling him to slow down, and he didn't know what that meant. Like, you know, it was, you know, I wrote something for CNN that published last night, and, you know, I would have to guess that there are few Americans in the last 76 years who have put their passport to better use than he has put his passport. He was just everywhere, and it was, you know, again, thinking about this over the weekend, one of the criticisms, you know, that would occasionally come up about my book was, you know, I would see people that would say, you know, there's just too much in it. And for a while, I started to be like, well, could I have dialed something back? But that was a life that had so much in it. I don't know how you could write a book that didn't have a ton in it. It was, you know, he was, people keep referring to him as larger than life. And the people that are saying that have lived very large lives, you know, people like Paul McCartney. So when you seem like a giant to giants, it's really a testament to the way that he moved about the world and through the world and just around.
We're talking with author Ryan White, wrote Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way, and talking about the life of Jimmy Buffett. Passed away on Friday with his family and friends by his side. You mentioned Paul McCartney. I guess Sir Paul was able to visit Jimmy at his bedside last week after he entered hospice care. That shows you how tight they became, I guess, over the years. And speaking of that, speaking of friendship, one of our local stations down here, Fox 10, with a really good story, they talked with Terry Ankerson, who was a classmate of Jimmy Buffett's at what was then the McGill Institute. And and he said, you know, even after all of the music, all of the fame, and all the riches that Jimmy Buffett eventually came into possession of, he said he really never changed. And I find it so interesting that time that Jimmy Buffett was rising through the ranks, the musical ranks, and you mentioned in your book, so many have, that was early on, kind of during the Vietnam War. A lot of people were writing songs about that. And I'm sure Jimmy, you know, he dallied in that a little bit. But once he made it down to Key West, he started writing about what he knew and loved. And that was a lot of fishing, writing about the beach. And then that's really what set him apart. And it's obvious that he loved that part of his life. And he kept that going with the boats and planes eventually throughout the rest of his life.
Yeah, you know, his toys got a little bit better, but he seemed, you know, the spirit that, you know, he really kind of inherited from his grandfather and his parents. You know, that took hold all the way. And, you know, the thing about Key West, that there are some really good songs that he wrote before he got down there. I think you listen to some of the, you know, those first two albums that are kind of considered the, you know, the Before the Beach records. And, mm-hmm. you know, my wife is not much of a Buffett fan, but I had them on at one point when I was working on the book, and she's like, "What is this? This is really good." I was like, "You ready? You want to hear who it is? Jimmy Buffett." But, you know, what Key West gave him was a palette and a setting that nobody else had at that point, writing the type of songs that they were writing, which, you know, I mean, he was... You know, one of the things that I always found so interesting about him musically is, like, he was very much a part of that Cosmic Cowboy set in Austin with Jerry Jeff and Willie Nelson when they got going. He was very much a part, eventually still, of the Nashville scene that sprung up kind of after Dylan went there and recorded Blonde on Blonde. And a lot of what came in that next decade, you know, I think, you know, Kris Kristofferson is probably one of the, you know, kind of one of the best examples of it, is what, you know, really laid the groundwork for what we call Americana today. But, you know, who did, you know, who discovered Kris Kristofferson? John Prine. Who was one of John Prine's great friends? Jimmy Buffett with Steve Goodman, all hanging out. Like, you know, he really fit in a lot of different genres. And so for a long time, he fit into no genre until suddenly one day he became his own genre. Suddenly, like, big country, big Nashville started churning out beach songs, you know. Kenny Chesney sitting on a beach the other day playing A Pirate Looks at 40, because not only were they good friends and that they admired each other, but, you know, Kenny Chesney took a lot from Jimmy Buffett's career, a lot of the lessons right down to, you know, how you build a brand.
Yeah.
You know, Sammy Hagar told a story online the other day about the first time he met Buffett, and Buffett saying, "Hey, you're the guy who's trying to be me." And David Hagar said, "We're all trying to be you, man."
You know, Brian, you mentioned the brand. I'll come back to that because that's exactly what's been on my mind this morning. There's the music brand that absolutely is its own, to use a cliche of the day, the silo, right, that people fall into, that the beach sound. But then beyond that, you think about rock legends out there that have not created a brand outside of music like Jimmy did with the retail side of it and the venue, hotels and casinos and all those things. I mean, there's no Zeppelin brand out there like that of resorts and retirement villages and merchandise. I mean, Jimmy seems to be the king of that.
Yeah, and you know, and to, you know, to give credit where it's due, I think John Colin, who is the CEO of Margaritaville, he deserves a lot of credit for helping with that. You know, Jimmy, obviously, you know, he began it and he saw it. John helped him sort of realize that. I always describe, when people ask me what the CEO of Margaritaville is like, I said, you know, I used to say that he's exactly as tanned as you would expect the CEO of Margaritaville to be. But he's very sharp. And one of the things he said was, you know, he used to, in his previous hedge fund life, he would have people come in and they would tell them all about their brand, like Seagram's or Pepsi or Snapple or something like that. And there was no story. There was no there. And he would hear from other musicians after Margaritaville started to become this big enterprise that it became. And they would say, okay, we want to build one of these too. But they didn't have a story either. And, you know, John recalled when we were talking for the book, going to Jazz Fest in New Orleans with Jimmy and standing at the side of the stage and looking out at that sea of parrot heads and Jazz Fest gatherers and going, this is a brand. This has meaning. This has something beyond any one lyric. Obviously, Margaritaville became, you know, I used to refer to it as the Margaritaville extended cinematic universe, because like he took Margaritaville and eventually all of the other characters from the story just kind of started to live on that island and within the resorts and stuff. He built a world before really anybody thought of what that could look like with, you know, with an immense amount of work to work with. It really all tied together. And the reason it tied together and made so much sense is because of the guy who was doing the tying, and that was, you know, that was Jimmy. And, you know, as John said once, you know, there is no actual Tommy Bahama, but there is a Jimmy Buffett. So.
Well said.
That is a really good line. Talking with Ryan White, author of Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way, and with all of Jimmy's songs, and there are so many of them, but his prose, his writing ability is apparent in a lot of them, especially in a day and age where a lot of, you know, hit singers don't write their own music. They get them from somewhere else. But Jimmy took it even beyond that, right? I mean, to the point where he was writing short stories and novels. And I'm interested to get your take as an author and writing about him, how much writing meant to him, not just, you know, playing music, not just being a businessman, but actually sitting down with a pen and paper and getting thoughts out on paper.
Very much. You know, if you go up to, for you guys, it would be, and I guess for me, it would be down, since I'm sitting in Michigan, for you guys over to Gainesville. You know, there's early drafts of Tales from Margaritaville, his book of short stories. There's a full draft in the Research Library of Florida of a Margaritaville script for a Margaritaville movie that never got made that he wrote. There's, you know, notebooks full of reporting research for the Where Is Joe Merchant novel. I think he really loved that stuff. And it was, you know, one of the things that he talked about a lot at the time when Tales from Margaritaville and Where Is Joe Merchant came out was, you know, how hard that type of writing is because it's solitary. And, you know, he used to do it in places where they, you know, he would go and check into a resort or something where they had a stage so he could run down and play a couple of songs and get the immediate feedback of applause. And then go lock yourself back into the quietness of working on a novel. But, you know, I mean, he was part of that literary crew in Key West with Tom McGuane, who became his brother-in-law, and with Jim Harrison. And, you know, he loved writers in the way that, you know, he loved songs and songwriters. I think, you know, for all the songs that he wrote that people love, I think it's also fantastic that he took the platform that he had and introduced people like Jesse Winchester or even John Hyatt, who has an audience to a much bigger and broader audience, or somebody like Will Kimbrough, who's from down in your
He's
area.
From Mobile,
and, from Mobile, and writes, you know, has written a lot with Jimmy, and it sounds like has a couple more on coming up on the record that I think is hopefully still coming out this fall. So, you know, he really loved writing and he really loved writers. And I think one of the things that's a little bit of shame, if anything, is that, you know, in the broader culture, in the broader discussions about music and rock and roll and art and all those things that people argue about endlessly, the brand got so big, I think it at times obscured, the talent that built it all.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It is. It's amazing legacy. And I guess it's one, I mean, we'll see. But when you're bigger than just performing your songs, you've created this brand that truly gives you this, you know, rock immortality, you know, or music immortality going forward. I mean, that name, that brand carries on even with Jimmy's passing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I keep coming back to the line in Last Mango in Paris about how, you know, a legend never died. It was, you know, he lived genuinely one of the legendary lives of, you know, the modern era, the places that he was, the people that he worked with, the work that he did. You know, some of those songs are going to live on because they are as good as any song that anybody has written. And I'm not even, you know, I'm not even talking about like the really super popular hits. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to hear Margaritaville with fresh ears anymore, but Margaritaville is a fantastically interesting song. And I remember talking to Mac McAnally with my pet theory that it is actually a sad song. And Mac was like, yeah, I know it is. And, you know, for giggles one night, I sat around and I sat here at home with my guitar and arranged it in a minor key. And I mean, you can make somebody cry with Margaritaville if you really want to. You get into the cuts that people don't know about, stuff like Migration, stuff like, you know, West Nashville Grand Ballroom Gown, you know, really the bulk of Living and Dying in Three Quarter Time and A1A are just stone cold great songs.
Absolutely.
That's great. And Ryan, we have so much appreciated you coming on with us today to talk about the life of Jimmy Buffett. I really enjoyed your book, Good Life All the Way, about Jimmy Buffett. Now is as good a time as ever. If folks want to pick that up, where can they buy that book online?
Amazon would be your first and easiest option. So.
Yeah. And, you know, he loved performing enough, loved those Parrotheads enough that even after getting that diagnosis 4 years ago, toured all the way up until May. That tells you a lot about Jimmy Buffett. Ryan, we really appreciate
it. I saw him in Maine last summer. He was great.
So. Still going. Yeah, he kept it up right to the end.
Ryan, we appreciate your time with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ryan White, Jimmy Buffett, A Good Life All the Way. Check that out on Amazon, and we'll come back to your texts and calls at 251-343-0106.
San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey, I didn't know that I'd be missing you so. Come Monday, it'll be alright. Come Monday, I'll be holding you tight. I spent four lonely days.
Hey, 56 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile. Mornings. Appreciate the text y'all been sending all morning. This texter says, outstanding interview. That makes me want to run to the local pet store and buy him a call. That's great. And Jerry Fort Morgan said, God's own drunk and a fearless man. Sheila with a great story about her family. Meeting Jimmy Buffett back in the
70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were staying at the same motel in Fort Walton Beach. He sat on the trunk of a car in the parking lot playing his guitar and singing. He was the nicest guy and so friendly. The vacationers staying there stood around and were treated to a wonderful time. And this story, crazy, and I'm sure a lot of you knew this one already. He wrote about it in his song Jamaica Mistake, but he flew down to Jamaica with Bono.
By the way, it'd be a fly on the wall to hear that conversation.
Yeah, what's that like?
Yeah.
And the Jamaican authorities misidentified his plane. They thought it was a drug runner's plane and apparently opened fire on it as he was trying to land. And they realized it was Jimmy Buffett and Bono when they boarded the plane. And basically, Buffett was like, you know what? I've gotten away with a lot of stuff I should have been caught for. He didn't sue him. He didn't go after them at all, but wrote the song Jamaica Mistake, all about. He didn't mention Bono by name in there, but one of, I'm sure, just an insane amount of crazy stories involving Jimmy Buffett.
Absolutely. And obviously, his roots deep around here, but his influence global. And the whole Parrothead movement, and it is, like we said with Ryan, the brand of what Margaritaville is, what that Buffett lifestyle is, will continue.
Yeah, it sure will. Labor Day Monday, a replay of the Jeff Poor Show on the way. Actually, it's a best of is what we're calling it. Same with Midday Mobile.
We call it an of with my show. But yeah.
Y'all enjoy it. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 6.
I rounded first, never thought of the worst, as I study the shortstop's position. Crack with my leg like the shell of an egg. Someone call a decent physician.